No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root, and this is show number 111. Yes, 111 shows that we've done at Revenge of the Birds Radio between over the last 3 years, between weekly all-Cardinals show previews, off-season stuff. But, hey, it's been a couple of weeks. We're recording on a Tuesday night, and we are talking free agency and a big move that has, you know, sort of the whole NFL talking, and the Arizona Cardinals get their pass rushers. We've got Seth Cox on the line as we're going to talk Cardinals, their free agency, and the big trade involving Jonathan Cooper, Chandler Jones, the Patriots, and the Arizona Cardinals. How are you doing, Seth?
Doing well, Jess. How are you?
Well, after a very, very boring first part of free agency, we finally have a splash. And I think this is what everyone's been waiting for, but no one expected this.
No, and I did find the spin on certain shows very fun, talking about maybe this was the Cardinals' A plan. This was the A plan all along.
No.
The A plan was JPP, the B plan was Bruce Irvin, and they missed on both those guys because they held something you and I have talked about before. They held very firm on their $8 to $9 million a year. Like they're not going to budge from that number. And the other guys said, well, we're getting more money elsewhere. Both of us have rings. We don't need a ring. We just need money.
So, well, and we'll talk about that in a second because we'll talk about that a little bit later because the Steve Keim Cardinals way of handling free agency worked in years past, but in the bulging salary cap of this offseason and the next offseason, it's not going to work as well. But let's kind of recap what's happened. The big news, obviously, on Tuesday was the lunchtime news where we got the word from Adam Schefter and ESPN saying that Jonathan Cooper was traded to the New England Patriots for defensive end, outside linebacker, pass rusher Chandler Jones, who had 12.5 sacks last season. He's entering his fifth-year option, so the Cardinals get 1 year of reasonable pay for a pass rusher in exchange for Cooper, who is entering year four of a very disappointing career thus far, and a second-round pick. That was the big news of the day. Before this, in the last week of free agency, really the Cardinals haven't done much. They tried to make some noise with some pass rushers. Jason Pierre-Paul, they made a really big push to sign, and he chooses to go back to the Giants, but only on a one-year deal. He stays for $10.5 million. The Cardinals were offering apparently more money overall, more guaranteed, and lose on that. All these pass rushers that the Cardinals were reportedly interested in, Jason Pierre-Paul, Mario Williams, Tom Bahali, William Hayes, and Bruce Irvin, all of them signed elsewhere. Actually, all of them except for Mario Williams ended up re-signing with their original teams. The one move the Cardinals did do in free agency, they brought in safety Tyvon Branch, previously of the Kansas City Chiefs, and before that with the Oakland Raiders. We'll talk a little bit about him. And then the other moves were re-signing. They brought back Drew Stanton on a two-year deal. They re-signed Jermaine Gresham. That's an interesting move, what happened there, as he turned down a four-year deal worth a whole bunch of money to come back on a one-year deal worth $3.5 million to play for Arizona. We'll talk a little bit about that. But let's start, Seth. Let's talk about the Chandler Jones move because, my heavens, you know, despite like what we were talking about spin-wise is that the local shows here saying maybe that was the big move. We know very well that wasn't the case, but what is your initial reaction to acquiring a legitimate pass rusher for ultimately, if you look at it from the big perspective, a guy who hasn't played much and a second rounder this year? What do you think?
I thought it was a great trade. I thought the fact that, you know, I didn't care about JPP much, just personally. Wasn't like I didn't understand the infatuation with it. I was all in on Bruce Irvin, and if you told me that Chandler Jones was available in any shape or form, he would have been number two on any kind of, you know, FA list of wishes that they could have gotten. And the fact that they got him for a number two pick, and, you know, we'll talk about the Cooper portion later, but they got him for a number two pick, I think was a great job by Steve Keim to see the importance of the now, ignore, you know, what could be, okay, maybe we can get a, you know, good to really good player 2 to 3 years from now. And you know, we can get a guy that for at least 1 year, probably 2 years, can be a pass rush force for us and go out there and get, you know, 9 sacks a season, which is what he's averaged over his 4 years.
And for me, I love the trade in terms of what the Cardinals needed this offseason. They got their pass rusher, and granted, it's only on a 1 year deal, a little less than $8 million. They're not paying a lot. The big free agent moves out there, and we talked about it. The Cardinals weren't going to budge from their offers, and Arizona kind of plays hardball when it comes to free agency. They know what they want to pay. That's the offer they make, and then if they go elsewhere, they go elsewhere. And so far, with the big salary cap spaces of other teams, they've lost out. Jason Pierre-Paul, I wasn't real thrilled about the thought that they were going to bring him in because, you know, playing with one hand. I did like some of his upside, but it was enough of a question mark to say, is that the guy? Is he going to be better than what they have? William Hayes didn't really move the dial. Tom Bahali, I liked in terms of a fit. The age I didn't like. Bruce Irvin, I was like you. I said that's a good move. And then Mario Williams, I liked the potential, but there were some questions there. So I wasn't all that bummed when they lost out on those. But considering what they want to do, they wanted a pass rusher. They don't want to spend too much. They did exactly that. Now, there is the upside and the downside of this. One is that they only have him under control for 1 year. They can franchise him. He's going to make significantly more money. Now, granted, he's going to be classified as a linebacker for next year. And they do lose out on a second-round pick, which ideally, you know, should contribute. But one of the things that we kind of heard from Keim and Arians in terms of pass rushers, they kept talking about rookies this and rookies that, is that especially if you look historically, and you've talked about it before, anybody you draft in terms of a pass rusher after about the top half of the first round, you don't get much production. Bruce Arians said on the radio not too long ago, he said, you know, Vic Beasley, who he loved, had a great rookie season. What, he had 4 sacks, same amount of Marcus Golden. And they're looking for more than that. So it's definitely more production that they're going to, assuming Chandler Jones or Jones again in 2016. But it gives them more production that they would have been able to draft for. And they've already got a stable of young guys that they've drafted that they need to develop. So it gives them right off the bat a guy that they need. It really gives them that threat off the edge. And that kind of puts them in this window because they're looking at a 1 year or a 2 year window here to win it all. And what do we have right now? We've got Chandler Jones under control 1 year, maybe 2 years. Carson Palmer is under contract another 2 years. Drew Stanton's under contract another 2 years. Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd, not under contract after this year. They're looking at the here and now, and you know, I'm okay with that, so because they get a big need and they didn't give up a whole lot, because it's being spun a lot of ways, but we talked about this off the air. Trading Jonathan Cooper is essentially cutting him, because they traded Cooper in a second round pick, and you and I have talked about that. The throw-in wasn't the second round pick. New England needs picks. The throw-in was Cooper. It gave the Cardinals more cap space. It was essentially cutting Cooper, which might have happened, and then basically giving up second round for Jones. And I'm okay with that. But, and I talked to you about before the show, is that with Jonathan Cooper, it allows the Cardinals to get rid of him before actual bust status. And they can say in week, they can spin it like this. Hey, we took this guy and turned it into this guy who was the missing piece of our team. When really, they had no intentions of using Jonathan Cooper at all. So they just got rid of him for whatever they could.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing I think that is going to come out of this is, you know, the Cardinals made a savvy play on a guy that they didn't need. And so what ends up happening is they look like geniuses. Hey, look, we traded Jonathan Cooper and a second-round pick for a 13-sack guy. Maybe he doesn't get 13 sacks this year. Maybe he gets 10. Maybe he gets 9. But, you know, an impact pass rusher. While Jonathan Cooper gets cut in New England, or, you know,
maybe he finally gets the change of scenery that he needs without all the pressure of being a number 7 overall pick, and he can perform. Maybe.
Well, and that's the thing. So I wrote this on a comment on the message boards on revengeofthebirds.com, and you know, and I've tweeted this. The only way Arizona loses, you know, in parentheses or apostrophes, loses this trade is if Jonathan Cooper becomes really good, right? Like they, even if they only have Jones for 1 year and Cooper, you know, is really good and or, you know, Cooper gets cut or anything in New England, basically they took a chance on a second-round pick. That's it. Like, let's look at their second-round pick. Kevin Minter, average NFL player.
Troy Nicholas.
already being replaced again by Jermaine Gresham. And, you know, in probably not going to play much.
Now, Golden is the one that we've got some hope for because they really like Golden. I mean, you know, the fans were kind of – we like him. But the way that they talk about Marcus Golden, the way his teammates talk about him, they love him.
So, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, honestly, like, who cares? Like, it's a second-round pick for a team that needs impact productions right now. Go do it. Like, take a chance. You know, win. And that's what they did. And like I said, I'd be very surprised if Chandler Jones is not in a Cardinals uniform in 2017. Beyond that, that's when it'll be interesting. But I think basically what you did is, like I said, the only way you absolutely lose this trade is if Jonathan Cooper turns out to be an all-pro in New England and, you know, you get nothing.
Or Jones does nothing. He gets hurt.
But that's even that. Like, to me, that's just like a draft pick.
It's true.
Like, it's the same exact thing as a draft pick. And I'm okay with that because, you know, like we said earlier, you're not going to get – even Marcus Golden, who, you know, everybody raves about and loves, even Marcus Golden didn't have the impact that Chandler Jones is going to have. So even if you get another Marcus Golden, you're still not getting as good of a player as you just got in Chandler Jones. So I'm okay with that because the chances – that the guy at 61 is as good as Chandler Jones are, you know, this season in 2016 are extremely slim.
Now let's talk about what it means to the pass rush, because now you go from having Marcus Golden as the biggest threat opposite Alex Okafor or Kareem Martin or an aging Dwight Freeney sometimes. So now you have on one side, on first and second and third down, you've got Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden. We know what Chandler Jones can do. We've seen it. Presumably what we've seen from Marcus Golden is that having a Chandler Jones on one side, as we saw in college in Missouri, when you had Shane Ray on one side, Marcus Golden on the other, Golden picked up a whole lot of stats. This potentially, is this not now the best pair of edge rushers that there are in the division?
Maybe pure edge, I don't know. I mean, whatever the Rams put out is still really, really impressive to me. Because Robert Quinn is the best player in the group. So that's, you know, that's how I would look at it right now. But you have to see what the Rams put out on the other side without Chris Long now. You know, I think what we need is we need Golden to finish, and the disruption portion of, you know, disruption equals production to become actual production. Because here's a fun little thing, and I have a couple friends that work for Pro Football Focus, so, you know, I try not to say anything bad about them because they're still, you know, I respect them. I respect all the work they do. They put in a ton of work. But I think their conclusions a lot of times are flawed. But it, in their eyes, Chandler or Marcus Golden was better than Chandler Jones
last year. What? That's absurd.
So Marcus Golden graded it out as a 12.5 pass rushing productivity, and I don't know how that grade actually works, but and Chandler Jones graded out as a 10. But you look at the actual sack stats, and Marcus Golden had 4, and Chandler Jones had 11.5. Or 12.5, whatever he had. So to me, you know, I want that 12.5 from Chandler Jones and like 8-9 for Marcus Golden before I am ready to proclaim Golden as a great pass rusher, or, you know, to give them top billing in the division. But I think it's getting closer.
And now, what does this mean for Dwight Freeney? I heard on the radio, and I kind of think now the Cardinals were playing wait and see with Freeney because they wanted to see what they could do. He was kind of plan C, where they go with, you know, Golden, Okafor, Martin, Riddick, somebody, and then the situational Freeney. But getting Jones and having Golden, you've got two guys that don't really need to come off the field. I think we've seen the last of Dwight Freeney in Arizona, unfortunately. And, you know, because there's Chandler Jones, I'm okay with that. Aside from that, Dwight Freeney was a great, great addition to that locker room.
I think they need to bring Freeney back still, personally, for a season. And the only reason why is because I think they need to make sure that they have a consistent pass rush. And one thing that we've seen from teams that are winning now, you can never have too many pass rushers. So, you know, even if Dwight Freeney's on a pitch count, he's all of a sudden on a pitch count with Calais Campbell and, you know, Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden, as opposed to just, you know, Marcus Golden and Calais Campbell. So I just think it can add more to the team. Jones can win from inside too. So, I mean, it's not like he's a pure edge guy. He can, you know, they can kind of line up in a 4-man technique and have Jones play a little bit of the 5 and let Dwight Freeney get outside and, you know, be like a 9 technique, you know, really off the ball, off the line, kind of like the Eagles used to do, and let them attack. And I think that could be, you know, ferocious. And so, if Freeney comes back for the 1 or 2 million that he was, you know, his number would have been if he played the whole season, I don't see the problem with it. Obviously, he's not going to get big money, but I think he can be an important role player, which is, you know, something you need.
So if you're going to go with Freeney, if you had to choose, because they're not going to have all the offensive outside linebackers. They've got Shaq Riddick, a guy that BA actually thinks is going to be really good. Maybe that's year 3. Maybe that's this year where he can be a situational guy. Kareem Martin, who might be what he is. Pretty good special teams player. A guy who can come in but isn't impactful. And then there's Alex Okafor. So I think it comes down to Alex Okafor or Dwight Freeney. Put that out there. You know, I'm guessing you'd take Freeney over Okafor. If I have to make a choice between the two, I'm probably also taking Freeney over Okafor because he also brings a veteran presence in the locker room, a guy who's been in the league long enough and knows how to win, while you've got the other guy who knows how to get hurt and, you know, party during the week, during the bye week.
And honestly, if they cut either Okafor or Kareem Martin, I wouldn't feel anything, you know, bad about either of those guys. I like Kareem Martin. I thought he had a chance. But much like Jonathan Cooper, he's more of an athlete than a guy that, you know, knows how to make plays with his athleticism. And
that's why he does well in special teams.
Yeah. And honestly, that happens in the NFL. You take chances on freaks, and sometimes they turn out to be super freaks like a Chandler Jones. Sometimes they turn out to be Kareem Martin and just don't put it all together. And that's why draft slot and where you get guys is so important, because, you know, Jonathan Cooper's a bust because he was picked in at number 7 overall. But if he was picked at the, you know, in the third round, or where Earl Watford was picked, nobody says a thing. Like, nobody says anything.
Unless they're Logan Thomas. Thomas is a bust.
Logan Thomas is a bust.
But he's still in the league. He's still in the league, though.
And a wasted draft pick. But, yeah. I mean, and that's just the reality of it. You know, like, where they were picked matters a ton. So, that's, yeah. I would go Martin, personally. But, you know, Okafor's issues, I would definitely weigh that into, and I'd be okay with that.
Now let's talk about, you know, the kind of the flip side of this. Now we've got kind of the pass rush taken care of. I don't see the Cardinals doing anything else this offseason. In fact, really, that sort of wraps up the biggest needs. The big move was always going to be somebody in the pass rush. After that, it's kind of smaller moves. And then one of those moves was bringing on Tyvon Branch. An interesting guy to bring in, a guy where, you know, it says, BA says they want length and speed. He's a little bit longer. I mean, in terms of length, he's 6 foot instead of 5'11". But, you know, historically, he's got speed, but he also has some injury issues over the last few years. And BA raved about his ability to cover man on man because he was guarding Rob Gronkowski in the playoffs, and he thought very highly of him, thinks he'll fit right in. And, you know, with the money, I like the move. I don't hate it and I don't love it, but he's a good fit, age-wise and skill set.
Yeah, I think it was a good pickup. I mean, it's a safe pickup. It's not anything special. It's, you know, not sexy. And basically what it does is it allows Tyran to come back and take his time coming back to get healthy. You know, I think that was their goal, is to not rush him back and not push him and not force him to feel like he needs to be back soon or early. And I think that's, you know, I think that's what Tyvon Branch gives them. He was a good ball player about 4 years ago, 3 years ago. Now he's just a guy that is good, but he struggles to stay healthy. And when he's on the field, he has, you know, he has really, really good games, and he has some really, really bad games. But if he was, you know, healthy, he'd probably have turned out to be a really good ball player. I think now is he's a guy that just, you know, you hold your breath that he's going to get hurt at some point. And it's an interesting signing in that sense, because they've kind of already got a couple of those guys. And it's weird to continue to rely on guys that have injury proneness, so to speak.
And that is kind of the thing we've noticed in some of the trends on the guys that they brought in. Leon Hall, a guy that they looked at. You got Tyvon Branch. They looked at Andre Smith, and these guys that I assume what they're trying to do is buy low with higher potential because they have more salary cap restraints than other teams. But yeah, it's kind of high. It's a little bit risky, although Now, I'm assuming at this point that we can all but say goodbye to Rashad Johnson. And now they're just going to run, despite what happened with Tony Jefferson, it looks like I would imagine he and DJ Swearinger will be back in the mix. That'll probably be Branch and TJ starting back there at safety until Matthew's good to go. And then from there, we'll wait and see with Swearinger and Clemens being depth and Matthew. But, it seems to be that Branch is what the skills he brought are the things that Rashad Johnson was not the best at. And while they'll miss his leadership and his coaching skills on the field, the fact that Branch has the higher upside with roughly the same downside, like Rashad's worst games are going to be the same thing as the worst games that Branch has, but Branch can do so much more in coverage.
Yeah, and I thought it was to replace Tony, honestly. And then, they've just continued to kind of slow it down with Tony. And is there anything more shocking than Tony Jefferson not getting any run in free agency?
And not even anything of any reports of any visits or anything.
Right. Like, I text you and they felt really confident. Like, they felt really confident that they were going to get a good offer from somebody. They haven't gotten anything from anybody. And
well, none that's come up, but there's some markets. I mean, guy like Jerrod Powers, not a word. Nothing. Now, I'm sure there's some movement somewhere, but he's been a guy that's been absolutely silent on.
Yeah, and maybe Cardinals fans and Cardinals, everybody kind of overrated the players in general. Like, maybe they're not as good as we think, or maybe it's a system thing. Because you look at it, and outside of Dansby, because he's been really good still, I mean, has anybody really, I mean, Cromartie was only good for half a year here, and then, so maybe, maybe the NFL's like, I don't trust these Cardinals players. they seem to play well in that kind of freestyle defense, but then when they have to have more discipline and then playing different defense, they struggle. I don't know. Maybe
Tony Jefferson is just who he is. Now, I saw an interesting tweet from him. There's a fan a Saints fan who said he would love to see him in that safety mix there, and he tweeted back saying, I'm more than a depth guy, G. So it's interesting. I love to see his confidence, but I think really he's going to have to bide his time at least one more year to. And I think that's kind of what the league is doing, because he really hasn't had a full time role. He's in and out of the lineup. He's efficient but not flashy. A good player, and I really like him. But I think the league is still, just like the Cardinals are, sort of wait and see.
Well, and my buddy is a Chargers fan, and he texted me and he said, hey, why isn't – he goes, I really like Tony Jefferson. I like him here. Why isn't he getting any run? And here was how I responded. I said, I like Tony Jefferson. I think he's a strong safety in a free safety's body who moves like a linebacker, and that's kind of what – his issues, quote unquote, are. He's not, great in coverage. He's excellent in the box, but he's not a big,
He's not a big Buchanan who's just going to take you out. He can hit.
And he can play near the line of scrimmage. So that's what my take on it was. And I think, and maybe I'm wrong, and I hope I'm wrong, because I like Tony. I think he's a great guy. I think he's a good ball player. But it seems like right now that's what the NFL thinks as well.
And that's okay. So he's got another year to prove himself. The Cardinals made a couple of moves of retaining guys. Drew Stanton wasn't as rich as I thought it would be. I thought it would take 3 years, $14 million. Turns out he comes back on 2 years, $6.25 million. Although should he end up being the starter? For injury purposes, he has the potential to make another bunch of money. I think it comes to another almost $4 million over $3.5 million each year. But yeah. They bring him back. BA says he was a number one priority in bringing him back to keep the quarterback room stable. They bring back Jermaine Gresham. They got the other guys, but that Drew Stanton, I think it was gonna happen. They don't want to have a rookie as their number two in a championship window. They don't want Matt Markley to be their number two in a championship window. And it turns out that Stanton's interest around the league was only as a backup. And if he was going to be a backup somewhere, why not stay where he is right now instead of going to Dallas or going to Indy or going to Miami or going to Tennessee, where he was just going to be some guy's backup. Now, yes, he could play in Dallas and it'd be a better situation, but it's still Dallas. Dallas is a mess. If you had a chance to be a backup in Dallas with the new assistant, Jason Garrett, or be a backup to a coach that you know, backup to Carson Palmer, we're good friends with, and where your family's at, I think it was a no-brainer for Stanton. Good to see it, and I'm glad it cost the Cardinals a little bit less than what I thought it was going to be.
I'm glad about that, too, because I was on your boat that it was going to be way too much money, and so I was like, oh, jeez. But, you know, it didn't cost much, and, you know, it's a good two-way deal in that it's Drew gets, you know, the same position he was going to get anywhere, but he also gets quite a bit of money if he has to play. And that's kind of what he wants. He wants a chance to play. Like you said, nobody was going to give it to him. I mean, especially Indy and Tennessee. I mean, even though both Mariota and Luck were injured last year, you can't expect that 2 years in a row. Like, you just can't expect that 2 years in a row, and you can't expect to.
He already did the backup to Andrew Luck thing.
Yeah, so I thought it was a good move in the sense of what they got him for. So that's, you know, I'm okay with that.
So how about Jermaine Gresham, though? That's the move that really puzzles me, because I'm not sure what to think about this. He turns down, he had interest from a couple teams, that he reportedly turned down a 4-year, $23 million deal with $12 million guaranteed to come back and play for a $3.5 million 1-year deal with the Cardinals. That doesn't make any sense at all based on what we know about Jermaine Gresham, because one, he's not going to be a 50 to 60 catch tight end in Arizona. It's just not going to happen because they don't throw the ball enough to the tight ends. And two, so either one way, he's betting on himself to get a bigger paycheck next year, or maybe he really wants to win here in Arizona. Now, he knows Carson Palmer. He's real close with Carson, so maybe that there's a connection, but that puzzles me to know. I have no idea. Maybe he really liked Arizona, and maybe the money was coming from a team he really didn't think was a good fit, but it was more money. I don't know, but that one puzzles me on his side.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm trying to look it up right now. I can't do it on my computer, or I'll lose my I'll lose my connection with you. But let's see, tight ends here. Here we go. And we'll just do by year, not cap figures. That's too much. We'll do. And, you know, it's not the Cardinals don't have a ton invested in the tight end position, and I don't know what he can get more than nearly $6 million a year. Honestly, like, I'm looking at this, I don't get it.
I don't know how he's going to get it with another year in an Arian system where, at the best, you're going to get 40 catches. I mean, unless he's betting on himself, or he's going to keep Darren Fells on the bench and Troy Nicholas on the bench, because honestly, Gresham was a really nice addition last year because he did everything well and was a very solid blocker and gave the tight end room something to really be good about, because he was a really good pair for Fells. Nicholas didn't do much there, but I like the addition for the Cardinals. I just don't get it for him.
Yeah, I don't get it at all. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Like, I mean, the top tight ends in the league are getting, like, the top 10 tight ends in the league are getting $6 million a year. I mean, that's it. Like, and, I mean, is he going to end up being better than Martellus Bennett? Probably not. I don't see it. I don't see why he would risk that. But you know what? If he's here to win, then more power to him, because he's one of the few guys that actually went with the, hey, I want to win, as opposed to I want to check cash out. And so you can't, you know, you can never knock a guy when he actually does something of that nature instead of doing the other thing, which is, you know, what I'm being completely honest here. I would have taken the money elsewhere. Like, screw this.
Well, at his age, at age 27, you should take the money. Honestly, how much longer is he going to play after, you know, after three, you know, if he gets a 4-year deal, he's going to play 3 years of that. And then after that, that's when you, you know, age 30, you take the smaller paycheck for the chance to win. That's how the cycle goes. That's how an athlete cycle goes. In the NFL, get your money while you can. So I hope the best for him.
Oh, absolutely.
And granted, I hope the best for him. I hope he has a good, great year. Another very, very understated move was bringing back Red Bryant. Honestly, I think he was valuable. He's a good guy to have, and I would think that he replaces Corey Redding, although for some reason they still have Corey Redding on the roster, because a $4 million cap hit seems exceptionally large for a guy that's going to play maybe 15, 20 snaps a game, maybe.
I wonder if they're just holding that for a reason. I don't know why.
Maybe he's mulling retirement. Maybe that's what it is, and they're letting him. And since they don't need the cap space, I'm guessing perhaps they're going to let him decide if that's in the plans. That'd be the only guess, because why in the world would you keep Redding on the roster? Because you've already got an old guy in Brad Bryant. You already got another old guy in Frosty Rucker. And then you've got young guys that you're trying to build up. I mean, you've got Calais, who's pretty close to an old guy now. And you've got Gunter, and you've got Stinson, and you've got Morrow. All those guys. Let's talk about the offensive line now, because now we've got a fun with the offensive line. There's a couple of rumors out there. The Cardinals have reportedly on Tuesday made Evan Mathis a 2-year contract offer, and they've got Jeff Schwartz coming in. They've already looked at Amini Silatolu, Carolina guard, who's now headed to Seattle for another visit. They reportedly brought in Andre Smith. Or bringing in Andre Smith later this week, and he's going to choose between the Vikings and the Cardinals. So offensive line, once again, is the Steve Keim focus of the offseason. Made the big splash in the trade, but it looks like they're going to be making at least one, maybe two additions on the offensive line, since there obviously now is a big there's a void at guard. And then I think they want to add someone at tackle to compete. I'm not, you know, neither one of us is sure where we stand with DJ Humphreys. Depends on the type of player they bring in. I think they plan on DJ playing, but clearly they want another veteran at guard. And so you're going to have big contract Vildir, big contract Upati. And at this point, it's going to be a modest contract, not a cheap contract, but not a crazy contract on the right side of the line.
Yeah, I like the idea of Silatolu, but he's injured a lot, so...
And will he be ready for the season? Coming off the torn ACL?
I don't know. And then I like Jeff Schwartz, but same thing. He's injured a lot. I think he's the best guard out there. But, you know, what are you going to do if he's injured all the time? You can't really do anything with that. You know, if they sign Evan Mathis, it makes sense. In the capacity that he is a good bridge between a Shipley who doesn't have, you know, a ton of starting experience, and obviously DJ Humphreys, who has none. If they draft a center, then it's an even better investment, because it's between, you know, a rookie center and basically a rookie right tackle. Having a guy with like 10 seasons under his belt. I think Schwartz is the better player. I tweeted this out earlier. I think Schwartz is the better player. I think Evan Mathis is the healthier player. And that's kind of what you got to decide between. Like, can you trust Schwartz to be healthy for 16 games and give you what he was when he was healthy? Or do you go with the consistency and the known entity of Evan Mathis, and the fact that he'll probably give you 16 games of really average to above average football, which is really good.
which is better than what they got than right guard the last two seasons. Yeah. I mean, Paul Fonseca, Ted Larson. I mean, when you're going from Paul Fonseca to Ted Larson, well, to Jonathan Cooper to Ted Larson to Evan Mathis, that's not a bad trade-off. It just doesn't address anything for your future, but the Cardinals don't seem to be too concerned about their future right now. And I like the Mathis addition. I think steady is what they want. Ideally, I think steady would be better than the inconsistencies of having Sila Tolu or Schwartz, even Andre Smith, who's not a guard. Then that, you and I talked about that. Bringing in Smith really doesn't make any sense at all because he wasn't that great at tackle. He's never played guard. He doesn't play the left side, so he's not much of a swing guy either. It would be, who knows?
Yeah, that's the one that didn't make any sense. We've talked about a lot of guys, you know, before Osa Mele signed, you know, we talked about him and the fact that he could play tackle or guard. There, you know, we talked about just a lot of guys and all the ability to sign different guys with flexibility. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're going with a right tackle only after you just drafted a guy that's a right tackle. You brought up a good point that, you know, maybe he's the backup right tackle and DJ Humphries is the swing tackle. But my counter to that, and I didn't say this off the air because it literally just came to me, my counter to that was, dude struggled to, well, I mean, he didn't even suit up during the season at one position. Like, how fair is it to expect him to be able to understand and know calls and protections and plays at two different positions coming into his second year and the first year he's going to actually take NFL snaps? Just my thought. You know, Veldier's been, knock on wood, a rock and healthy, so that hasn't been an issue so far.
So, here's another one. Here's the other head scratcher, because Bobby Massey, who is now the right tackle for the Chicago Bears, the Cardinals made a pretty big pitch for him to return. That one is a head scratcher as well, which leaves you to think, do they really think now? So, are the Cardinals giving lip service to DJ Humphries the same thing they were doing to Jonathan Cooper just so he didn't sound like a bust? Only now they're doing it because they're not sure he's going to be ready, or they're not 100% confident in him being able to be the guy in year two. But, right? I mean, Bobby Massey was all but gone. And then they were trying to bring him back. They made a big push for him, and Massey even said so. The whole Massey-Andre Smith thing seems to say they are not 100% confident in DJ Humphries. I think they want him to win it, but they don't sound confident in their actions.
Yeah, and that's interesting to me because you're talking about a guy that you drafted 26th overall or right about there. I can't remember the exact pick. And, you know, there's been speculation that he wasn't their first or second choice. So, I don't know. I tend to think that maybe there's something in the fact that maybe they want DJ Humphries to play guard. I don't know. That could be, like, that's the only thing I'm like, all right, this has to, like, maybe this is me making something up in order to, you know, understand what the heck is going on with why they would be bringing all these right tackle only guys.
Yeah, that makes two guys who can't play anything but right tackle, Bobby Massey and Andre Smith. So now that we've got the offensive line, so what does this do for the first couple, and no longer first, not no longer second round, but what does that do to the first round pick? I think really it puts offensive line back on the board for the first round, maybe even quarterback now. Since they've already gotten their, if they sign a guy, so they've already got impact now, and they can use another first rounder on an offensive lineman who maybe plays now, maybe plays later, or time for quarterback. Obviously, you've said as well, there's really good defensive line depth. Cornerback is another thing. The cornerback is not normally one that you're going to throw out there year one, especially in this Cardinals system. So I think we might see. I think it's really opens the door to seeing them go guard center in first round.
I don't honestly, and I tweeted this earlier, I don't think it changes anything at all. I think every position is still 100% a viable choice, including another, you know, quote-unquote edge player. Like, if a Noah Spence is a guy that they haven't red flagged, and we'll talk about that more as the draft nears, but if a Noah Spence is a guy they haven't red flagged, then, you know, why not? The Broncos really showed this last season, you can't have too many pass rushers. You know, if Golden goes down or if Chandler Jones goes down, there's really no difference from last year. So why not just make sure, like, make a strength as opposed to what they had before, which is it really wasn't a strength at all. And, you know, we'll let this come as it go, you know, as we may type stuff. That being said, I could see, like you said, guard. I joked earlier, Cody Whitehair. He's a tackle and a guard that played at Kansas State. Very talented player. Kind of like Joel Bitonio. He's getting Zach Martin comps.
And he's getting some. I've seen a couple. I know that Matt Miller has given him some looks as a top center as well.
Exactly, and that's why I don't like giving a guy a comp of, hey, this guy was an all-pro as a rookie. Here's a comp, you know, here's a guy he's comparable to. That's not fair to that guy. Like, all of a sudden, you're expecting, all right, well, this guy better come in and be an all-pro. Like,
Jonathan Cooper and Alan Fanick and Jari Evans, yeah, like
exactly.
Him?
Exactly. And so, I, you know, when I do player comparisons, I do spectrums. And I say, you know, Cody Whitehair could be on the, you know, if you want to say Zach Martin's his ceiling, which is, you know, obviously really good, I think Ted Larson's his floor, which is obviously what we've seen. A guy that can spend eight seasons or six seasons and he, you know, he's going to get signed again, he can spend a ton of time in the NFL playing and starting. So a good player that maybe isn't, you know, great.
He's not an impact player. But
a
he's
a guy that, you know, you can draft and plug in and be confident in what he can do. That's just my thoughts. Quarterback is the big one, honestly, and I've said all along, I don't see this team passing on their quarterback. Who that is outside of Carson Wentz, I don't know. I'm convinced that BA loves Carson Wentz like he liked Blake Bortles. You know,
he was open about it this time. I mean, last year there was one guy, or 2 years ago, there was one guy in the draft that they thought was a franchise guy. BA's already saying that he loves Carson Wentz.
Yeah, and then my player comparison has been, I think Wentz is on that Bortles spectrum of a guy that can, you know, that's athletic, big, a little mobile, has a good arm, not a great arm, but a good arm, and can, you know, win in a bunch of different ways. But he's ran a system that is not conducive to come in and start right away. North Dakota State ran the ball about 900 times a game. And honestly, if you go back and look, North Dakota State, there's no drop-off from when Brock Jensen was there 2 years ago to when their freshman or sophomore backup came in and filled in for Wentz for seven or eight games, whatever it was.
Don't say that's a negative. Just call North Dakota State a quarterback U. It's a college full of pros.
Exactly. And so, and to me, that's a concern, but it's something that, you know, I've seen enough of him where I think he can be a very viable player. He'll be on the same, you know, type of idea for me as Bortles was, where I thought Bortles was a guy that should have gone end of round one, sat for a year, and then, or a year or two, and then come in and taken over. Clearly, I was wrong about his development, you know, playing right away in Jacksonville and being able to make the errors. I mean, dude threw, what, 33, 34 touchdowns this year? So
yeah, he was good.
he's clearly on the right path. I see a similar type of prospect with Wentz. He doesn't play with the same freestyle that Bortles is known for, but I think he can be a good player, and I would think he would be a really nice fit in Arizona overall.
All right, so let's kind of look ahead to what's left in free agency. We know that something's going to happen on the offensive line, whether that's Evan Mathis, whether that's Jeff Schwartz, whether that's someone else. Where else do you see the Cardinals going? I think really the one other position that I think they almost have to do veteran-wise is bring in a cornerback. Maybe that's bringing Jerod Powers back at the end of the day. He seemed pretty confident the other day talking to Josh Weinfuss that he felt in his heart he's going to end up here again. But he is looking for a 3 to 4 year deal with not crazy money, but he's looking to get paid for what he's done. So he's probably looking to the $6 to $7 million range. 3-4 years. The Cardinals need to do something at cornerback. I wasn't necessarily one to think that they needed to go and get a cornerback too, especially because they sank a bit of money in Justin Bethel, and I didn't jump off the Justin Bethel train so far. I want a guy who can come in. I would think that their target is an older guy who could start but doesn't have to start and is not going to be paying like a guy who has to start. A guy like Leon Hall is a good example for that. An older guy with some history of injuries who can start as a two, but doesn't necessarily, you aren't going to expect him necessarily to be a two. And that way, for Bethel's confidence to think, okay, they still believe in me, for the fans to think, and for me to say, they still believe in Justin Bethel, because I can't believe that they would pay him $5 million a year, you know, just a few months ago and say, oh, never mind, he's not going to be a good corner at all. I think they still see him as a quality corner.
Yeah, I think, and they paid him as such, and so I think you can't let go of that idea yet, because if you do, you run the risk of kind of alienating all your players going forward. Like, you can't go out there and start giving young guys. I mean, the Jonathan Cooper thing has already happened, and I'm going to guess that's going to weigh on some guys' minds. You know, like, oh, did they give him a chance? Did they really believe in him? You know, it seemed like every time he had a chance, he got hurt, and then he lost the chance. Same thing with Bethel. Like, if you bring in a, you know,
like a Prince of Mukamara.
Yeah, if you bring in a Prince or, you know, one of those guys for a long term, you know, four year, $30 million deal, Sean Smith, for instance, and all of a sudden Justin Bethel's going, okay, well, I'm glad you paid me. I'm not going to complain, but now the expectation is I'm just the highest paid special teams player in the NFL. Like, that's my expectation. That's who I am. You know, why didn't I get a chance to prove myself? Whether you agree with that or not, I don't know. But that, you know, that can be a thing that becomes, you know, something in guys' minds as you go forward. And that's not what you want.
Do you see the Cardinals going any other direction other than cornerback and then offensive line? Do you see them? I mean, there was the report that Chris Johnson's going to be signing a deal here in the next day or so. Cardinals are in the mix, but there are some other teams. If Chris Johnson comes back, do you see them going another direction with running back, or do they decide to go with Andre as their backup, or maybe draft a guy to be David Johnson's backup? Did you think you're on mute?
Oh, great. Sorry.
I thought we were going to go a whole show without doing that, because I know it happens to you 2 or 3 times every one of your shows.
I was going to say, that's not bad. That's only one time. No, I think they're going to draft a guy if Johnson doesn't re-sign with them. I don't know if they feel like they want to mess with the dynamic of the locker room and everything, right? Like, they've got a pretty good core, and they've got, like, you don't necessarily want to bring a guy in that's going to rock the boat, especially if David Johnson struggles out the gate or something. You know, you don't want to do anything like that. So I just see if Johnson doesn't re-sign, he understands his packet or the pecking order and who he is in the gist of everything. I think that's the play. I'm just kind of going through the free agent corners and running backs. I don't see any that are like, oh, you know, like, oh, bring that guy in. Like, if you're going to screw up chemistry or anger people or, you know, make guys worry about positions, it better be a guy that can make plays, right? Like, it better be a guy that's a difference maker. So, I don't see anything that's, like, overwhelmingly attractive.
And we may see later down the line, of course, the one-year the late pre-training camp one-year deals, those are yet to come. That's the thing to look forward to. Let's just kind of touch on right before and kind of as we kind of close. Is the model that the Cardinals are using in free agency going to work with them moving forward? Steve Keim kind of set the bar that first year when there was a flat salary cap, and he played hardball. He said, "Here's the offer that we're doing. You leave, we take that offer off the table." They're kind of using the same thing. They draw their line in the sand. They say, this is what we're going to offer, take it or leave it. And so far what we saw this offseason with the big salary cap bump and lots of space, it wasn't nearly as popular to come here because there was more money elsewhere. Is this going to be an issue down the line, especially since the salary cap keeps going up?
Yes, it is. I don't think you can play that game. I say at the beginning it's going to be like a four-year, $60 million-plus if they want to re-sign Chandler Jones. Like, they're going to have to pay the dude. Like, it's not an option. Vernon Olivier, whatever his name is, got $16 million a year, basically, and has, I think, 20 less sacks on his career in, like, 7 more games. So Chandler Jones, I mean, Chandler Jones is a 9-sack-a-year player. That's $9 million a year, but that doesn't include inflation. And I think Steve Keim's stuck in the non-inflation sense of, you know, paying guys. Like, it's going to be $15-plus million a year to sign a guy like Chandler Jones to a long-term deal, I think. And so he's going to have to either pay that or he's going to start missing out on those, you know, quote unquote big guys. Because, you know, I went back and looked. They got a steal on Veldier at $7 million a year.
Upati was not a steal. Nope.
Upati, honestly, they overpaid. Not in a bad way. I mean,
Well, anymore, it's not an overpay, but at the time, yes, it was.
Last year's offseason, it was a slight overpay. And that's the thing. That's what you're going to have to do now. Like, there's not an option. You can't be like, oh, well, you know, we'll play this out. Let's see what happens. You have to pay these guys Bruce Irvin got $9.5 million. JPP got $10.5 million. And then Olivier got, $15 million. Like, that's kind of what the going rate is going to be moving forward on these guys, and you're going to have to pay them. And if you don't, you're going to have to draft really, really well.
Yep. And that's the key. Like, you better have the replacements there, or you're going to be either you're just going to be bad at the pass rush, or you're going to be paying someone else the same amount of money.
Exactly. And you kind of look at it, and the teams that are the quote unquote, you know, ones to watch and mimic after the Patriots the Patriots and the Packers, what do they have in common? Well, they have quarterbacks that they've been able to run through different regimes and different types of teams because of their quarterbacks. So, Carson Palmer's good, don't get me wrong, but he's 2 more years good. You don't really have that option right now. So you're going to need to find a player that can kind of overall, or, you know, you're either going to need to adapt to the times, or you're going to need to find a quarterback that can allow you to maneuver year to year without really having a huge drop off.
And moving forward, the Cardinals have, at least right now, they look like they have their window open for this year. They're keeping it open, I think, for next. But after that, we could see some drastic changes. But we're going to call that a night. We're going to wrap up this free agent show, this post-free agency show, the post-Jonathan Cooper and Chandler Jones trade show, and wrap up episode number 111. I think what we'll probably do, we'll give next week a rest, unless there's some other big news worth talking about, unless there's a bunch of moves that are worth talking about. And then after that, we'll go in 2 weeks. And I think we'll start talking draft, and I think we're going to let Seth go, and I'm going to pick his brain on draft stuff and give some of my thoughts as well. But in the meantime, head over to RevengeOfBirds.com, be a member there, talk Cardinals with some great fans there. Make sure you're listening to the Draft Breakdown podcast that Seth runs with Justice and Justin over there. And we'll call this a night. And thank everyone for listening. Hit us up on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio, on Blog Talk Radio, anything else you can possibly find us on Twitter, on Facebook. We're everywhere, guys. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Ruth. Thanks for listening. Have a great night.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.